When we're called upon to fill a key ministry role, it's not uncommon for us to deflect. Just like Moses, the reticent leader of the Hebrew nation, we find all sorts of reasons to decline. We're too busy, or we're not qualified, we're inexperienced. G'day, I'm Clayton Bjellin, and today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll continues his biographical study of Moses. In this message, he'll remind us that God isn't impressed with our personal resume. When God calls on his children to serve, he's looking for a willing heart. Chuck titled today's message with the question, who? Me, Lord?
I spoke of the child of God as a sheep. I'd like to change the analogy and speak of the child of God as a mule. The scene isn't quite as attractive, but it's as realistic as the matter of a sheep. As a matter of fact, there's a psalm that says, don't be as the stubborn mule who needs bit and bridle to keep it in line. Don't be like the mule. Have in mind our problem of being stubborn when God speaks. Remember, we closed the message last Sunday evening with three erroneous reactions to the voice of God. To begin with, we have the problem of running before we are sent. That's brought on because of our intense nature, because of our anxious desire, often to get the job done our way. So before we're sent, we're running ahead. This leads inevitably to failure. And so the next reaction to God's voice is to retreat after we have failed. This is because of insecurity. We are in the cult of success in our society. We don't know how to handle failure. Once we fail, we look for the closest place to hide and the darkest spot so we'll not be noticed by anyone else, and we plan to retire there because we fail. And then when God's voice comes again and he speaks to the birds with broken pinions and plans to use us again, we resist when we are called. You know that there are all three activities going on among children of God. And not all of that is going on outside this building. Some of you tonight are engaged in one of those three erroneous acts: running ahead, retreating, or resisting. Resisting is often brought about because of an inferiority. We feel that we simply are not the best qualified for the job. We really do not feel worthy for the task. We have a record of failure, and so when God comes and puts his finger in our face and says, you're my choice, often the reaction is resistance. I've made a mess of it before, and I just cannot go through that again. So we're stubborn, we resist. This occurred to me the other evening when my 5-year-old son brought his shoe to me, which he had gotten in a knot. Nobody can get a shoe in a knot like little Chucky. And his approach in getting the knot out is to pull the strings harder. Rather than bringing it to me earlier, he brings it later. And the knot is so tiny and it is so tight that it takes an act of God to get the knot undone. And I've told him time and time again, son, when you pull the strings and it won't open up like it's supposed to, and he's looking at me and batting those eyes, don't pull harder. Come get me. And he says, I think I can get it out. That's why I pull harder. I thought about that the balance of this week, and that's the way it is with the child of God. We get into the knot, and we will not admit that it is a self-made knot, and we pull harder and harder until it takes an act of God to get us out of it. Came across this interesting piece. With thoughtlessness and impatient hands, we tangle up the plans the Lord hath wrought. And when we cry in pain, he says, "Be quiet, my child, while I untie the knot." And that's what God wanted to do with Moses. His life had been one great knot of self-effort, hard, sincere labor in the energy of the flesh. And it had gotten so tangled and enlarged and complicated that finally he retreated to the desert, where he stayed for 40 years. Until one great day, God caused a bush to burst aflame. And from that burning bush, God spoke to Moses. And he said, in effect, "Moses, I want to use you again." And then began the problem of the mule. Moses had been resistant for 40 years. He had been licking his wounds so that when God finally came, Exodus chapter 3, verse 10, and addressed Moses with a direct, simple call, Moses couldn't handle it. Let's look at that passage together, shall we? Moses said, in effect, "Who? Me? Lord?" But before we look at his excuses, let's consider the call. Exodus 3:10. God is speaking. I want you to notice how simple and direct and clear it is. "Therefore, come now. I will send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt." Now that wasn't complicated, was it? He spoke in a tongue that Moses understood. He gave a simple, twofold command. First, he said to Moses, "I will send you." And second, he said, "You will bring my people out." That's the plan. I want you to notice that it was not a multiple choice arrangement. It was not even an invitation. It was a call. God does not speak and ask our advice regarding his plan. God makes declarations. He doesn't open up the scene for a rap session or a dialogue. God says to us at very unique junctures of our lives, "Now I have this in mind for you. I know that you have knotted things up in the past, and I know that you, being sheep, will knot things up in the future. But as for today, right now, this is my plan for you. Moses, go. I will deliver Egypt. I will deliver Israel from Egypt's bondage." Now, Moses was resistant, I am convinced in my heart, having pondered over this for some time, because Moses thought he had to be the deliverer. God never told him that. God told him that he was to be the instrument of deliverance, but God would be the deliverer. There's a difference. In God's calling, he has a plan, and he never expects you to be the one to carry out the plan. He's going to carry it out, but he wants you to be the instrument of action. You see, his reputation is at stake, not yours. All he asks is that you be a vessel, an instrument that he can use, and that's all. Moses didn't get that. You'll notice his resistance is in immediate, verse 11. "Who am I? that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt. Wait a minute, Moses. You didn't get the plan. All you have to do is be in the right place at the right time and watch God work. It's marvelous. You just have a heart that's prepared. You be sure that you're walking in obedience with me, and you watch me deliver those Israelites out of Egypt. He said, Lord, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Now, it sounds on the surface as if it's a humble plan. Look, for example, at his reaction, verse 11. Who am I that I should go? That sounds nice and humble, doesn't it? But as a matter of fact, it's a question that is inappropriate. Moses should have responded, Lord, I am available. I am flammable like this bush. If you wish to burn me out, I'm ready to go. And then God responds to Moses with a rather direct statement. Look at verse 12. Moses, I will be with you. This shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. What mountain? Verse 1, Mount Sinai. If you were to travel to Mount Sinai tonight and take a scale and measure that great, massive mountain of gray stone, you would see that it stands some 8,000 feet above the earth. I suggest at this moment Moses stood back and he looked up and he saw that sheer mountain, and a funny feeling went over him, because God said, Moses, the sign that you can count on will be that when you lead those people out of Egypt and you come right back to this mountain, you're going to come to worship me with them by your side. I believe Moses knew in his heart he was a goner. He couldn't talk God out of that plan. Ever try to talk God out of a plan? It's the most frustrating experience I know anything about. You think you're persistent. I think Chucky is persistent. You ought to work with God. You ought to work for God. That's even harder. I'll tell you, when he gives you his plan, there's no alternative. And you know something else? His choice often seems so illogical. Honestly now, would you have chosen Jonah to be the evangelist at Nineveh? Not on your life. Not on your life. Neither would you have chosen Moses. 80 years old, and he's over the hill. He's been driving sheep for 40 years. He's lost his touch with people. The only thing he knows how to interpret is the bleat of a sheep. He's been raising a little family, living with his father-in-law, hasn't even had enough money to build his own place. He seems like a very unlikely suspect for that job, doesn't he? That's the way he felt. You know something? That's the way you feel. But God says men don't look at people like I look at people. Men and women look at their outward appearance, but I look on their heart. I look to find qualities that are very, very significant that I can use. And then I make that choice because they've got those qualities. Let me show you a verse that proves that. First, that is 2 Chronicles chapter 16, verse 9. 2 Chronicles 16, 9. I can see the dust blowing up from the pews this evening as you are trying to find 2 Chronicles 16. We don't read much in this section of the Bible, do we? I have a close friend that refers to the Chronicles and the Kings as the pots and pans section of the Bible. It's a part we don't spend much time in. But there are some rich truths here. Look at verse 9. 2 Chronicles 16, 9. The eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth. Why? Well, that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his. Mark that verse. Mark it well. You will be able to use that verse in the lives of some others that will come to you for counsel or encouragement or in your own life. God's eyes move to and fro to find people whose hearts are just right for a task. And then when he finds them, watch out. He gets you into the stream of action. You see, Moses did not view himself as God did. And so he was like the mule. He was stubborn. Back to Exodus chapter 3, let's look at some of the excuses that he brought, trying to convince God that he really wasn't the man. Verse 13 is excuse number one. Let's use these words to describe the excuse. I will not have all the answers. That's the excuse. Lord, I'm not the man because I will not have all the answers. Now let's read the verse. Moses said to God, behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I shall say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me. Now they may say to me, what is his name? Lord, I don't have that answer. What shall I say to them? Before I look at the answer God gave, I want you to think about the excuse. It's very, very often, it's often used by Christians today. I can't do that because I'll get in a corner and I won't know how to handle it. I'll appear ridiculous and foolish in the eyes of other people if I do that. I can't do that, Lord. I won't have all the answers. Remarkable thing about God's word, I never read that we have to have all the answers. Why do we feel we must have all the answers? Stop and think about this just from a practical point of view. Some of you are older and you have to think back to the days when you were in school. Others of you are engaged right now in your academic pursuit. Remember those times that you got the professor in a corner and you knew that he didn't know the answer and he wouldn't admit it? What did you do? Well, chances are, if you were like most people, you began to bear down and bear down until you began to saw him off on the end of the limb with a set of facts. Because there is something inside of us that wants the other person to simply admit, I don't know. I have never lost respect for anyone who said, I don't know. But I really have lost respect for those that just won't say it. Look, remember this morning? You have nothing to prove, so you have nothing to lose. That's why it's good to be a sheep. Just basically dumb. Basically. Why do we have to have the answers? Because of pride. Pride says, if you don't have the answer, they'll laugh at you. But you know, intelligent people won't. God said to Moses when he asked, when he answered, I won't have all the answers. God said, but you will have all of me. What's more important, Moses? Look at how God handles him. They're going to say, who is this God that you're referring to? Well, Moses, tell them this. Verse 14, tell them, I am has sent me. You shall say to the sons of Israel, I am has sent me to you. What does that mean? English readers of an English Bible go across that and wonder why in the world that was significant. It seemed to satisfy Moses. Well, these words are the translation of the very characters in Hebrew that spell out Jehovah. Moses, the self-existing one, the only infinite being, the only self-existent being in all of the universe, he has dispatched you. You represent him. I am has sent you. You tell him that. Furthermore, the word Jehovah is the most intimate term for the living Lord known to the Jew. Moses, when you stand before them, you let them know that the intimate God of Israel has dispatched you to be his representative. And Moses, I give you two promises. Look at verse 18. Promise number one, They will pay heed to what you say. Promise number 2, verse 20. I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my miracles. The verse closes, and after that, he will let you go. Promise number 2, they will let the people of the Hebrews go. They will believe you, Moses. And second, they will let the people go. You've got my promise to stand on. I won't let you down, Moses. You feel like you don't have all the answers? Oh, but Moses, you'll have all of me. You represent I am, and you represent my promises. Now let's see what Moses did with God's promise. Verse 1 of chapter 4. Then Moses answered, "What if they will not believe me or listen to what I say?" Are you ready? Excuse number 2. I may not have all their respect. Here he fears ridicule. He lacks prestige. And he says, "Lord, I'm going to go back like an old desert shepherd, 80 years old, and I'm going to walk into that sophisticated culture of Egypt, and I'm going to walk up before Pharaoh, the ruler of the land, and with my staff in my hand, and this crummy outfit that I've been wearing all these years, I'm going to go as your representative, and I'm going to effect the exodus. Oh, what if they won't believe me? I may not have all their respect." It's not any fun to feel foolish in front of people, is it? Let's face it. You could be Moses. You could be the Apostle Paul. Or whoever else you may wish to name. And it's not fun to feel foolish. And that's what he was afraid of. He was afraid of their ridicule. But I want you to notice what he had ignored. I just want to read the two verses together. Go back to verse 18, chapter 3. Moses, they will pay heed to what you say. Now verse 1. But Lord, what if they do not pay heed to what I say? Get the idea? It's an open denial of the promise of God. Moses, when you go, they're going to listen. But Lord, what if when I go, they won't listen? Now, you know, it might be strong of me to make this statement, but I think God must have shook his head there for a moment. Didn't he hear what I just said? But you see, Moses is a mule right now. You can't reason with a mule. God said, "Moses, you will have all my power." That's my answer. Moses said, "I may not have all their respect." God says, "Yes, but remember what I promised? You will have all my power." Let me show you Moses' excuse. First of all, it's totally hypothetical. It begins with the words, "what if?" Those are the words of worriers. Every worry wart in the family of God lives on those two words. What if? Because we worry most often about what if such and such occurs, right? Right. You don't want to admit that, but that's true. Many people feed their minds on the uncertainty of tomorrow, and they build a case on what if. That's what Moses was doing. He was picturing in his mind walking over into the land of Egypt and standing up in front of Pharaoh before all of those, you know, guards and all of that beauty of that court, and he thought, "Oh, I won't have their respect."
You've been listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled "With a Simple Question, Who? Me, Lord?" It's just one of 20 studies in Chuck's biography of Moses, and we are just getting started. So let me give you a quick preview of the practical messages that are ahead in this hallmark study, which Chuck delivered several decades ago. In the coming weeks, Chuck will present a practical sermon called "God's Will, God's Way," and then he'll present another helpful message called "Why Leaders Crack Up," and another one about succeeding great leaders that's called "Filling the Shoes of Moses." Now, these are all coming up on Insight for Living. And then we're pleased to offer you a new booklet from Chuck and Cynthia Swindoll. It's called Finding Healing Through Forgiveness. Families, churches, marriages are prone to fractured relationships. And in this booklet, Chuck describes the biblical path for asking and offering forgiveness. And Cynthia tells a highly transparent personal story when forgiveness healed a broken relationship in her family. Again, the booklet is called Finding Healing Through Forgiveness. And you're invited to learn how you can request a copy right now when you head online to Insight for Living. You'll find us at ifl.org.au. I'm Clayton Bjellin. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his classic biographical study of Moses, Monday on Insight for Living.